Dawn Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT and the free Odyssey app.
The mission was carried out with stealth and with precision. There were no American casualties. And while Congress is divided after receiving briefings on the extent of the damage, I'm sure that we've derailed Iran's nuclear program, at least temporarily. And there's some valuable deterrent effect for America's adversaries who witnessed last week's exercise. Then, last Tuesday, President Trump left the White House en route to Europe. At the time, there was a question as to whether Israel and Iran would honor a ceasefire that caused the president to offer the most unfiltered, non-controversial, direct words that I can recall anybody ever saying about the Middle East.
We basically have two countries that have been fighting so long and so hard that they don't know what the f*** they're doing. Do you understand that?
Cut to The Hague, where he arrived for NATO meetings and was able to wrangle an agreement from our allies to more than double their defense spending target from 2% of gross domestic product to 5% by 2035. Also, while at NATO, in a press availability, he did something rare for Trump and I found rewarding. He showed empathy. It came in an exchange with a Ukrainian journalist who said that her husband was a soldier. She asked whether the U.S. would supply her country with Patriot missiles.
Now, are you living?
6 straight minutes. 6 straight minutes of praise. And that was not Fox News, guys. That was CNN. Yeah. 6 straight minutes. You could go out there. Maybe you could put that link up on YouTube, Dan. But joining me to help kind of talk about all of this winning, Trump's winning so much that CNN just did 6 straight minutes of praise. Joining me is John McLaughlin. He is Trump's poster and a strategic consultant. And I met you maybe about, I don't know, a little bit over a month ago now, John. And I said, so you've been with Trump since the escalator ride down? And you was like, no, I was with Trump even before then.
Yeah, even before then, 2011, he was thinking of running in the 2012 race against President Obama. And we spent about a month writing a campaign plan. And at the time, President Trump had the highest rated TV show with Celebrity Apprentice in primetime on NBC. And I kept telling him, if you announce, they're going to pull that TV show. And he was saying he had some lawyers that said no. But then he called me after we'd written the plan and got him all ready to run. And he said, well, maybe now the time is not right. And he ran in 2015 instead. And he used that plan to win the 2016 race, and he's been winning ever since.
Yes, so, and you've been with him ever since, even before the escalator ride. Not too many people can say that from a political perspective. So thank you so much, John, for joining me. I appreciate it.
Well, it's a pleasure. I saw you at the Job Creators Network in Savannah, and that was a great conference. And
it was.
You know, small business owners have been really backing the president, trying to get this Trump tax cuts made permanent in the bill before the House and Senate, and hopefully we can do that before July 4th, get it signed into law in a couple of days.
You know, it's really interesting that you would say that, because at the Job Creators Network, they represent almost half of the GDP, those people who contribute to the GDP. And those small business owners, they were backing, they're very supportive of this big, beautiful bill, the Tax Cut and Job Act. And yet you go to social media and even some of these, you know, these pundits, right? The ones who don't have a small business in manufacturing or producing or building something other than running their mouth. They are the ones who are like, oh, I don't know. I don't like this. But it was really interesting that the small business owners are overwhelmingly in support of this tax bill.
All right. And we've done polling for the Job Creators Network. We've done polling of all voters for the Chamber of Commerce where, you know, when people are told that only half the voters are aware that the Trump tax cuts that were passed in 2017 had a time limit. And they're supposed to lapse after this year. So everybody in America would be faced with about $2,000 income tax increase or other tax increase. And, you know, when they're told of that, you know, every Democrat in the House and the Senate now has voted against making those Trump tax cuts permanent at some point where they They're voting for the largest tax increase in history, before $4.5 trillion. And the ironic part is the small business owners know that. And small business owners want to see these Trump tax cuts made permanent. They want to keep the pass-through taxes, the 20% deduction, because what we found in the Job Creators Network, they will use it to expand the economy. That they will in effect, use it to hire more people, expand their business, and grow the economy. And that's the whole point of the Trump tax cuts.
Absolutely. So I always find that contrast to be interesting when I see people who make a living talking versus people who make a living building things. There's always a disconnect, it appears. But let's pivot a little bit, because we have Zohran Mamdani in New York. I mean, what a head turner that is. But I want you to help put this in perspective, because your job is to understand where people are moving, and to see that. Mamdani, we can make jokes about it all day long, but I believe there's a message there. Yes, we have overeducated, white, affluent young people who don't know left from right, who are behind this, but there's a working class base that is also a part of it. And there's a message that they're sending to both the Democrat and the Republican Party. What is that?
Well, the message the message is scary, because I grew up in the Bronx when I was young, and I went back to university there, and I live close to New York City, so I've done work all over the country, but I've done work plenty of work over the years in Philadelphia as well, but in New York City. This out and out socialist is scary, because when you look at his positions, he talks about not just defunding the police, but basically abolishing the police. He's in favor of cashless bail, which they have in New York, where if you get arrested for a violent crime, they don't keep you in jail. They let you go and tell you trials there, and so you can commit more crimes. And they also, there's a whole bunch of things where he's talking about, he was talking about over the weekend taxing, raising the property taxes on white homeowners. Well, he doesn't mean just white homeowners. He's going to raise taxes on everybody. And so it's bad, because in New York City, there's about 70% of the registered voters who will vote in a citywide election will be Democrats. And only about 15% are Republicans. So when President Trump ran statewide, although he made great gains in New Jersey and New York, and we were hopeful if Biden stayed in the race, I think we would have won New Jersey and done even better in New York. But most of the popular vote that we gained, we certainly won Pennsylvania, and we certainly did what we had to do in the suburbs and the city of Philadelphia. But in New York State, most of the gains we made, it was among African Americans, it was among Hispanics, it was among voters under 35. We were able to get significantly more votes, but in New York City we still only get 30%. So to win statewide, you need 35. For Mamdani to lose this race, it takes Democrat rejection. So we worked in the past for Mike Bloomberg. Certainly when Mayor Giuliani won, there was Democrat rejection of the incumbent. And so when Mike Bloomberg won, remember 2001, Mark Green had beaten Freddie Ferrer, who was Hispanic from the Bronx. And Bloomberg was able to win 30% of the African-American vote, over half the Hispanic vote. He was able to win the Jewish vote, which is all these ethnic groups, basically the tribes in New York. He was able to win, and he got elected in 01, and then he got reelected in 05, and then he got reelected again. And now you're looking at this and saying, can we create that kind of rejection of the Democrat, where over 40% of Democrats would have to reject Mamdani for one of the opponents to win? So Mayor Adams, who left the Democrat primary because he wasn't going to be able to win it, so he saw the handwriting on the wall, because he's a moderate, and he left that Democrat primary, and he's still in the race, and Andrew Cuomo has an independent line. He might still be in the race, and Curtis Sliwa is on the Republican line. The key thing right now is getting all the facts about how radical Mamdani is out to the voters, in spite of, the press may give him a pass, and a lot of Democrats may decide to, give him a pass and say, well, he's still a Democrat. But the reality is his positions on the issues are just so basically, unbelievably radical, where President Trump's called him a communist. But when you look at it, he's talking about it. In the past, he's been on record as a Democrat socialist in New York. He's been on record for abolishing prisons, period, abolishing medical bills. That'd be nice, but try to get a doctor if you don't have medical bills. Legalizing sex work, so you'd have human trafficking throughout the city. Have safe site injection. So, if you go to Sylvia's in Harlem, There's a methadone maintenance clinic near there, and you got to watch your car because people just smash in the windows and take out what's in the back seat.
It just breeds criminality. But it's also just so anathema to the Constitution, to a representative government, to our American values. I know we're hanging on by a thread of those American values, but those values are being redefined. And I believe his message, I haven't seen a lot of people talk about, like, this isn't something that the rest of the nation can just be like, oh yeah, those silly New Yorkers up there. I think this is a very defining moment of who are we as a country, because not only is he a socialist and ridiculous and his things will probably never come to pass, but it is a famous quote from Abraham Lincoln, public opinion is everything. Right. With it, you cannot fail. Without it, you cannot succeed. This man has public opinion on his side. And I guess what you're saying is we need to be a part of shaping the public opinion. Like, do you really want a radical Muslim? Because I think he's a radical Muslim. I think he has a problem with not wanting a global intifada. I think he wants that.
Right. He wants. And by the way, when you talk about that quote from Lincoln, it's one of my favorite quotes. And Newt Gingrich has it in the beginning of his book, Trump's Triumph, where he talks about, because that's what we would talk about during the Trump campaign, where we need to do the one thing we have behind us is public opinion.
Yeah.
So if the majority of Americans, because remember, Donald Trump won the popular vote. If the majority of America supports us, we have public opinion on our side and we can grow it. And President Trump in the good polls is actually, his job approval is above 50. We have him 52, 53 in our last national polls. And that's higher than the vote we got. So we got to keep building it. And that was before his successful, making sure Iran doesn't get a nuclear weapon. And at the same time, he's passing tax cuts that will be no tax on tips, no tax on overtime. So we're going to grow public opinion. But Mondani, on the other hand, he's dangerous because he's a socialist. He's also dangerous because when he couldn't admit that he couldn't repudiate a global intifada, he's saying he hates people. He hates Israel. And it's not hard to all of a sudden, once you start hating Jewish people, to start hating other people.
Okay.
And go from there. And so he's got a problem, and we've got to stop him, and we've got to, educate people to how radical he is.
You know what? I mean, you're so right. And that is history, what you're stating. That is facts, is that it may start off a hatred for Jewish people. But what history tells us is that hatred spreads. And before you know it, it's Black people. Before you know it, it's all other kinds of people. And it's not just civil disobedience. We just saw what happened in Washington, D.C. with the two Jewish young people being murdered. Yep. When you look at the Intifada 1 and 2, it is very aggressive, and it is dangerous for humanity. And for someone who wants to represent a major economic city in America to have a problem with repudiating it and rejecting it outright, I think that's a problem.
Yeah, and basically, 1 in 6, 1 in 7 voters in this election will be Jewish voters. And usually they vote 3-1 Democrat, but it's not going to be that case now. But it's scary. It's also scary because we have anti-Semitism in New York. You have attacks. We've had attacks going on throughout the United States, whether it's, in Western Pennsylvania, they attacked people at a synagogue or up in the suburbs of Rockland County, where you've had people, you know, somebody invade a rabbi's home with some sort of sword or whatever like that, right, and try to knife people. So you get these scary anti-Semitic attacks. And you know what's bad about it? It's because they don't dislike you because they disagree with you on the issue. They dislike you because of who you are. And if you're allowed to dislike people because of who they are, mm-hmm, there's no stopping them. And it's scary when the person, what a socialist means is he's a big government socialist at minimum. He may be a communist like President Trump says, but a big government socialist believes the government should decide, not the people. And that's really scary, because if you get a mayor, like, because he's already saying there should be free bus fares. Oh, that's a nice thing. But he doesn't control that in New York City. The MTA does. The state legislature controls that.
Like, that's why I say a lot of this stuff isn't feasible.
Right. It's not feasible. And he needs to be exposed for the radical he is. And if he's got a problem with other New Yorkers, New York is the greatest city in the United States. So it's the greatest city in the greatest country of the world. And if we have a mayor who allows people to hate other people, it's totally the opposite of what New York City was all about. New York City's always been a melting pot. There's a reason why the Statue of Liberty's in our harbor. There's a reason why, you know, Ellis Island is there to tribute to everybody that came here. And also, when you think about it, by the way, the largest voting group in New York City is African American.
Let me just say, because I've been saying it all week, I'm so proud of Black people and their voting. And that's not something I can say regularly, right? Because we tend to vote against our own best interest, voting for Democrat for the past 60 plus years. But on this particular case, not that Cuomo is a great alternative, but they did not vote for Mamdani because he wants to abolish the police. Black people know that is antithetical to our instinct to live and to thrive, right? And so I think that was a really big issue for Black people when it comes to Mamdani. However, something Vivek used to say all the time, people will only sell what you're willing to buy. Mamdani is selling something that the public is willing to buy, and I get the crazy, you know, trust fund socialist, but Hispanics voted for him. Asians overwhelmingly voted for him. What is it that he's selling that the people are buying that Republicans and Democrats need to be aware of?
Well, by the way, in the Democrat primary on that first choice ballot, he got less than 50%. He got 44%.
Okay.
So it's significant because he beat Andrew Cuomo, because Andrew Cuomo had significant negatives. Like in a poll I did for a candidate who didn't run in January, Cuomo inside the Democrat primary had 47% unfavorable, only 49% favorable, which made it really hard for him to win a ranked choice voting situation. And that'll be announced by the end of today, supposedly, from the Board of Elections. So they have this crazy ranked choice voting system. But on the first choice, he only got 44% of the Democrat turnout, and it was less than 1 million. In the governor's race, 1.8 million showed up for New York City, and in the presidential race, 2.6 million showed up for New York City. So there's a lot of New Yorkers that need to be educated, and if they know where Mamdani stands on the issues and why he won't repudiate hate, he's slicky saying, you know, I'm going to freeze the rents, I'm going to give you free bus rides, I'm going to give you free child care. Yeah, he's talking the positives of a, you know, like the communist system where they promise you everything free except that, you know, till it comes time to
free ain't
to
free.
Have it or pay for it. It didn't work. By the way, he wants supermarkets to be city run. You know, and that didn't work in the Soviet Union. Remember the empty shelves of if you're old enough to remember, when the Soviet Union collapsed, this supermarkets had no food.
Hey, John, we got a caller. Oh,
he just dropped off.
Oh, no, sorry. Joe, I'm getting ready to come to you, Joe. Call back. Oh, man, I keep losing my callers. I'm so sorry, guys. I'm so sorry. Please call back, and I will put you on as soon as you pop back up, Joe. John, but again, I think what Mamdani, yes, he's crazy. His ideas are crazy. I think he's dangerous. He's a radical Muslim at that, which makes him, you know, because you know who else want to take care of you and make all of the decisions for you, Ayatollah Khomeini. And I don't want him here, right? I don't want him. No. I don't want to live under the Revolutionary Guard. But I think he's speaking to something that is real, and that is a squeeze. I've been talking about it for a while since JCN, is that there is a very real, palpable squeeze on the middle class. No one really talks about the middle class, but in the working class, we're always talking about the one percenters or poor people. No one really have a conversation. At one point, we used to always talk about the middle class, but now we are becoming a nation of rulers and renters. And there is a very real squeeze on working class who are trying to build something, who are trying to dig their way out of poverty. And there's a squeeze on the middle class who are trying to build, claw their way out and into the top 10%. And I think Mamdani is speaking to these people.
Well, he is, but you know, Donald Trump did. And what's ironic about this whole thing is, having worked for President Trump's campaign, I mean, we were talking about reducing inflation, and now this big, beautiful bill is there to have tax relief for working middle class people. That's what it's about with no tax on tips. That's what it's about with no tax on overtime. That's what the child tax credit, we raise it, and so people get a real benefit, and they get some relief from 4 years of inflation, and that's important. So, you know, you don't hear it in the media, but this is the lowest that gas prices have been on July 4th in 4 years. So, you know, when you're filling the gas in your car and your stuff, you know, people are kind of they're feeling okay, but we've got to make sure Washington finishes that job. But Mamdani, he's out there sensing that, and he's making these promises, but his solutions won't work.
Oh,
his solutions
to
have the government deliver it. Yeah, no, and we've got to expose him, because if we can raise his negatives and develop Democrat rejection, where Democrats decide this is the wrong guy, then let's see in September who's in second place. Is it Mayor Adams? Is it is it Governor Cuomo? Is it Curtis Sliwa on the Republican line? The one who's in second place then will be the one to stop Mamdani. But right now we've got a lot of education to do about how radical Mamdani is and how bad he is, and expose it, because he's going to try to put a nice face on some really bad ideas.
Oh, he is, right? Every interview I see, he's smiling and he's talking so friendly and sing songy in his voice. You know, he's trying to put a sweet face to slavery, because that's what communism really is. It doesn't work out. Ask the people. I'll never forget during COVID in China and people hanging out their apartment building screaming. Do you remember that?
Yep. No,
yeah.
It's
crazy.
It doesn't work.
It doesn't work.
No. So we've got to educate people to where he stands so they can make an intelligent decision this November.
Before I let you go, what about Elon Musk saying, anyone who votes for the big, beautiful bill, I'm going to make sure, if it's the last thing I do, I'm going to make sure you lose. That means something to most of these Republicans who are there just for the power. And they're very, you know, Republicans aren't known for strong backbones and spines. So for someone like Elon Musk to come out and say, whoever votes for this, I'm going to create a third party and I'm going to make sure you lose your primary next year. What does that mean?
He's going to waste a lot of time and money. The sad part is, as I already explained, is like, if this bill doesn't pass, we're going to have a massive tax increase that will really hurt the economy. And I don't know Elon Musk. I've been with Donald Trump since he first thought about running for president back in 2011, and through three campaigns with him. Mr. Musk came on board the day after President Trump survived an assassination attempt at Butler. We'd already been ahead in the national polls for 2 years. So, you know, he came on board because we were winning. Maybe he's upset about, like, President Trump sent a True Social about Elon might have been upset about they're getting rid of the electrical vehicle mandates that his company Tesla survives on, or other government work. I don't know. So I, you know, it's just a mistake. He needs to come back onto the Trump train and realize that this is the best thing that can happen now. And then, you know, once the rules of Congress are, so once we get this Trump tax cut made permanent and the economy is growing and we can hold the House and the Senate, he needs to come back on, and then we can work on other legislation to keep the economy growing and help middle-class people.
Is there an appetite mm-hmm. for the people who you're surveying? Is there an appetite for a new party?
No, not right now. By the way, maybe among the Democrat Party, but not among Trump voters. Mm-hmm. Trump voters, his base is rock solid.
Yeah.
And whomever he supports in the primaries wins. And whomever he tells them to go out for and vote in November, they tend to win too. So we've got a challenge, because there's a lot of people here that are rooting for America not to succeed, mm-hmm. just to hurt Donald Trump, and that's wrong. They
yes.
need to realize. They need to realize we're all Americans. We're in this together. We got to grow the economy together. We got to help each other with jobs. We got to make sure that America is safe and secure. We got to secure our borders. There's so much in this bill that's important to the country, to keep criminals out, to literally strengthen our military in a world that's dangerous right now. And you know, I mean, he should get on board with this. And then if there's some things they want to hash out and change in future legislation,
then pick up the phone and have a phone call. Get off Twitter. John, I thank you so much. John McLaughlin, Trump's poster and strategic consultant. I appreciate you, sir. Thank you so much for that wisdom and insight. I loved how you just made a comparison. Yes, Mom Donnie is offering something, but Donald Trump is offering something real in this particular bill. I appreciate that perspective. Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you. I appreciate it, Kathy. Look forward to seeing you again.
Yes. Okay, guys. I'm getting in the middle of my time here. 855-839-1210. And I promise, as soon as you call, I am going to take your call no matter what. You can't stop me. We're moving on. But as promised, I am going to go straight to my caller. Phil, you're in Delaware. What's up, Phil?
And good morning to you. Great show.
I love the energy.
Well, you've made it happen, so you get it. You know, it's interesting you brought up about Mondami and his non-willingness to embrace all facets of New York. But when he won, refuted, like you said, about the Antifa. Also, he specifically singled out, he said, white neighborhoods and billionaires. So how many food groups are left? Just the schlumps that'll say, oh, yeah, I know, if he promised free buses, free this, free that, we're going to get it. What are they? How goofy are they?
You know what? But people only hear what is in their own self-interest. And, oh, my goodness. What is his name? The famous black economist. I can't think of his name right now. But he wrote a book called First Level Thinking. Most people only think first level. Right. Everyone is human. And then they're like, OK, yeah, everyone is human. So let's just open up our borders and allow everyone to come in. And they don't think about, okay, well, next level thinking is, well, who are these people? How do we vet these people? Who's going to support these people? Do we know these people? It just doesn't make any sense whatsoever. Thank you so much, Phil, for calling in. I appreciate that. Okay, I want to bring in my next guest, Joe from Texas, Mr. Joe Penland. You guys know him. I have him on quite a bit. Because you're calming, Joe. And in a world of everything, you know, everything just kind of pops on the scene and then is fleeting. I earnestly believe we need people who have been around for a minute, who have seen this, who have seen the cycles of life, the ups and the downs, and who can provide some insight. And that's why I asked you to come on quite a bit. He is a businessman turned political activist. You sponsored the Tucker Carlson live tour that traveled across the nation. And I believe it was pivotal in our winning. Trump winning last year. Thank you so much for coming on, Mr. Penland.
Thank you. I appreciate always visiting with you.
Yes. Hey, listen, I have another caller. Do you mind if I take him real quick and then you can help me answer his question?
Yeah, go right ahead.
Okay, awesome. Hey, Ed, what's up?
If I don't wish Kathy Barnett a happy 4th of July, I just might have to cry.
I love the rhymes, Ed. I love the rhymes.
Hey, I could give you a rhyme every time. It'll never cost you a thin dime because you're in your prime.
I would like to think so.
Hey, so I want to know, did the big, beautiful bill pass yet?
I've been watching that, and as of right now, Senate bill nears final vote. So they're nearing the final vote. So, no, not yet.
Well, guess what? We don't need a winter coat. They're near the final vote.
We're near the final vote. Ed, thank you so much for calling. Okay, Mr. Penland, I don't know if there was a question there. I don't think so for you, but... thank you again for coming on. I wanted you to come on because a little birdie told me that you had a private meeting or an opportunity, a space to speak with the president, with President Trump, not too long ago at a D.C. dinner you were invited to. What did you ask him and what did he say?
Well, I had just a brief time with him. You don't get a lot of time with the president. Obviously, there was 1,800 people at that event. I did have a round table with the speaker with about 20 people. And then after that, I got to visit with the president a little bit of one-on-one.
Mm-hmm.
I asked him how he always could have the same positive attitude that he has and always come back, you know, with something better than what he had the day before, no matter what they threw at him. I said, you know, no, I've never seen anybody that's had any more thrown at him or his family, you know, and you certainly don't need the headache and, you know, and all the heartache that goes with this job. And he said, Joe, somebody has to do it. And so I gave him some what I thought was some South Texas, I thought it was humorous, but I thought it was good advice too. He chuckled a little bit and he said, well, let's go ahead and take a picture. So we did.
I love that. Someone has to do it. I think we're always looking for that $1 million kind of pie in the sky response that changes everything. But I said it earlier to someone who had called in. The simplest things in life are often the better things, and is oftentimes the correct thing, is that someone has to do it. And he has elected him and his family, and you're right. I mean, he's been through a lot. I think the overwhelming majority of us would have buckled and cried uncle by now. And yet he is there, and he is winning. Every time I turn around, he's winning.
Well, you know, what drives him, Kathy, is he loves America. There's no two ways about it.
Yeah.
This is his country. He loves America. He loves the American people. He loves the American spirit. And they're not going to bend this man, and they're not going to break him. He will continue to come back stronger day after day after day. He's down in Florida today looking at a camp that they're working on down there to try to get some of the bad illegal people out of the country. I think that's going to happen very quick. Matter of fact, they may go live with that camp today. They've been working on it day and night to get it ready, and he's making a tour down there today. Governor DeSantis was down there at the end of last week. So it's something big happening. He's making good on his promises to get the bad people out of here. Unfortunately, a few people that weren't bad got caught up in it. But I think his main focus is to do exactly what he promised, you know, when he was running for president.
I believe that, too. And I agree with you. I believe he loves this country. I believe he wants good for this country. And there has been a lot of winning, whether we're looking at what happened in that 12-day war between Israel and Iran, whether we're looking at how he forced the hand of NATO to increase their spending, the fact that no one, not a single one Not a single illegal has come through our border last month. I mean, that is huge compared to what we were looking at under the Biden administration of a flood of people. We have no idea who they are coming into our country. And he's done it all. And now he is, going after people like Karen Bass and others for impeding the work that's being done. We're winning in the Supreme Court. And I love this winning. And then I hear your question of you asking him, how can one man carry this big burden on his shoulders? And his response being, someone has to. And I can appreciate that. But then I look at, Elon Musk is saying, well, if anyone votes for this bill, I'm going to make sure you lose. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, it's unfortunate. I think Elon went way out on the limb saying he was going to take $2 trillion out of our budget, which I thought was very high. I'm not criticizing and say he didn't do a good job or he came up short or what have you. But, I don't think anybody makes points in this country criticizing the good work somebody else is accomplishing. And our president has accomplished a lot in a short period of time. Is he going to please everybody? He won't please everybody if he stays there 50 years. So to say and come back now to criticize this, that, or the other, I think it's short-sighted. I wish it wouldn't happen. People jump from one side to the other all the time. What we really got to focus on is getting this bill passed, getting this behind us, not having the largest tax increase on America that we've ever had. So there's some things here that needs to happen. And I would ask Elon, I'll probably never visit with him, but how does he feel about if we don't get this passed that we're going to put the largest tax increase on every American, man, woman, and children? Why would we want to do that? I think we have to get this behind us. There's lots of good in this bill. It's not a perfect bill. I don't know that there's ever been a perfect bill, but
something's going to pass.
His disapproval of the president right now, I think if I was him, I'd let it lay.
Yeah, I know, right? Mr. Joe Penland, Joe from Texas.com, thank you so much for being on. I appreciate you, sir.
Yes, ma'am. Have a good day.
Yes, and that economist I was thinking of, guys, is Thomas Sowell. Dan just came through. Thank you, Dan. Yes, the great Thomas Sowell, economist. Yes, first-level thinking. How do we get people to move beyond first-level thinking? Blessings. I see y'all on the other side. This is it for today. You can still call me, though. I'll take your call, 855-839-1210, 855-839-1210. I am looking, and the Senate has still not voted yet on the big, beautiful bill. Trump is speaking after his tour at Alligator Alcatraz. Oh, my gosh. He is completely irreverent. And I love it because I think that's what we need. I was up late last night looking at the different provisions that are in this bill that were taken out, that were put back in. Again, this is not a perfect bill, so don't go around telling anyone this is the perfect bill, this is everything, this is... No, be realistic about it, okay? It is not perfect by a long stretch. However, it is probably as good as it is going to get in this country and in this Congress, in this Senate, Congress meaning the total body of House and the Senate. It's the culture in which we're living in. There are a lot of things I wish was in this bill, like one of them being they had to remove a federal funding pause. Because right now there's like a 90-day verification period, and the federal government, i.e. you and me and our tax dollars, pay for illegals to be covered during that 90-day period while the state verify whether or not they're illegal or not. But during that 90-day period of time, they're getting whatever Medicaid treatment that they want. Well, the Republicans were going to put in, but it was removed, a 90-day verification period where during those 90 days, the federal government, i.e. you and my tax dollars, do not pay for any kind of services until after 90 days and the illegal has been or the individual has been verified to be a legal American citizen. Well, as you would guess, that was completely removed. So there are things like that that I wish had made it in, because I do not support giving Medicaid services to illegals and yet trying to be hardcore with Americans. I do believe Americans, if they say there's about 35 million able-bodied Americans who there's nothing wrong with them. They could be working. They could be out getting a job and being able to fund their own health care, but they're not. I am absolutely in agreement that they should, that we should create the path for them to be able to stand on their own two feet. I don't think there are direct lines from A to B. I think there's a lot of movement that goes on here. And I think most of the time we only think in parallels, right? Like in straight lines. But for example, one way to help people get on their own feet is to make sure there are meaningful jobs, that people are able to get a meaningful job, work a meaningful job, be able to save, not pay all of their money in taxes, but be able to put money aside, different incentives for them to purchase their first home, making sure interest rates are down, making sure and doing the necessary thing from an economic perspective that keep inflation low. And it's not just one thing. And that's why I'm so impressed with President Trump and Secretary Scott Bessent and the things that they're doing. Because when you talk about tariffs and making sure that there is an equal playing ground, that we're not sending all of our jobs over to other countries, but that we're bringing manufacturing jobs here, that checks the box on creating jobs that the working class and middle class can build a life on. When you're talking about bringing in these tariffs dollars in order for us to use that to pay down our debt, that helps significantly. When you talk about the things that he's doing from an economic perspective to keep inflation down, all of these things work in tandem, and all of them are needed to get people in a position where they can stand, where they can make the right decisions, be able to stand on their own two feet, and be able to create a life for themselves. This is necessary. So just remember, you are not crazy. You're not overreacting. You're not woke. You're just awake now. You're conscious. And now that you're awake and conscious of what's going on around you, it's time to move, not in anger, but in purpose. Because I believe faith is necessary. Family still matters. And this country is still worth fighting for. You've been listening to Kathy Barnett sitting in for Don Stensland. I will see y'all tomorrow. Blessings.
Don Stensland from Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.